Welcome to the Open House podcast site, available at openhousecommunity.com.au.
We kick off tonight with the story that's had the world reeling with horror for just on this past week, the unthinkable attack on the Westgate shopping mall in the Kenyan capital of Nairobi. Kenya has been in official mourning for days. Scores of burials are still happening for the 67 known victims of the attack. 61 people are still reported missing by the Red Cross. The Al-Shabaab group has threatened more attacks unless the Kenyan military withdraws from Somalia. It's a great deal of fear in Kenya. Here's what one shopper at the mall said this weekend. "I don't feel safe here. I'm a mother, and it's hard to take those images out of my head after those you saw on television with children getting shot like animals." What are we left to say after seeing all that? Is it possible to make any sense out of it? It's yet another one of those events where I'm left thinking, what was all that about? To guide us through that and to get a sense of what it's been like there on the ground in Kenya, Dr. Edward Ngara has kindly agreed to join us on Open House. He's the Kenyan team leader for the wonderful African Enterprise Organization. He hosts his own Sunday radio program, listened to by half the Kenyan population. Edward has just returned from a tour of our region, in which I caught up with him for a wide-ranging conversation that you'll hear later tonight on the program. But for now, Dr. Edward Ngara joins us from Nairobi at the end of a most harrowing week for the nation. Edward, welcome to Open House.
Thank you so much, Lee, for having me. It's a pleasure.
Thank you. Edward, are there words you can think of to describe what this week has been like for Kenya?
Yes, I think of two words. I think the word is shock, and the word is fear that has been spread all across the country, in the hearts and in the minds of the people. I say shock because, you know, we totally were not expecting this kind of thing to happen. And the magnitude of what has happened here is totally almost like out of the blues. And the place that it happened was a huge, big shock for us. And particularly for me, because just about 2 months ago, I had a request from my daughter to just take her for a walk and drive through the city, and we ended up at the Westgate and walking with my family through the Westgate up and down and buying ice cream and just looking at different items. And then this happens at the same venue in a very upmarket place.
Yes,
we were totally shocked and taken aback. The numbers of people that were killed in that place, the kind of massacre that happened in that place was nothing but shocking, and it has had a very terrible effect of spreading fear right across the country that this could happen anywhere. The amount of blood that we've seen in Westgate and the bodies of people lying there, people from different nationalities and people of different ages and just well-meaning Kenyans who are just about their businesses and doing their shopping in the mall. It's very shocking and sends a lot of fear in the hearts of people here in Kenya.
What can you tell us about the motivation for this attack and the Al-Shabaab movement that was responsible for it?
The way I look at it is the international war that the Al-Shabaab is fighting against the Americans and the Israelis, because there is an ongoing animosity between these groups of people, and Kenya happens to be friendly to both the Americans and to the Israeli people. And so because of the strategic interests of the two nations in Kenya, we seem to bear the brunt of these attacks. You can remember in 1998 when there was the bomb attack at the American embassy in Nairobi, and that was motivated to inflict pain. The motivation was to inflict pain on the American embassy and the American nation. But Kenyans died in the process. And so it has happened again and again, and that has affected our tourism industry in Kenya. And we identify the fact that the Al-Shabaab are just next door in the Somali country. And Kenyan forces went in under the command of our president and wiped out the Al-Shabaab right into Mogadishu, restoring the control of the country back to the government of Somalia, away from the control of the Al-Shabaab. And that, of course, agitated the Al-Shabaab, who decided to retaliate revenge on Kenya because we participated in the delivering Somalia into the hands of the legitimate government, yet they collected lots of revenue illegally from the Somali people. And so because of liberating Somalia and cutting off their source of supply in that nation, Kenya bears the brunt of this revenge as they attack the Americans, as they attack the Israeli strategic position.
Yes.
Because as you may know, Westgate is partly owned by the Israeli people.
Yeah.
And the Americans are all around Kenya. And so hurting both those two eventually hurts Kenya. And this is a revenge mission of very brutal people who are very cowardly because they don't come out in public, they come incognito, and this cowardly act is condemned in the strongest terms possible. So we really, really mourn with the families that are hurting.
From the many stories that we've seen and been shocked by over this past week, was there one particular story of what happened in that shopping center that struck you, Edward?
Yeah, as you say, there are many stories that happen, including children. A child who was very, very courageous to run through people who had guns and just running towards another man who was serving them, who had a gun too, and finally got out, and the mother got out of the place. As they looked at the courage of this little girl who looked like 4 years of age, and getting out of that situation, I really think of that little girl.
Yeah.
But more importantly, what I was watching as they recounted the stories, there was a courageous Muslim young man who went in to save his brother from all that saga. And he had been trained on how to use weapons by his dad. And he goes in there and courageously moves right through those very dangerous people and manages to force back those Al-Shabaab people for a while. And in the process of securing shop after shop, he is said to have saved hundreds of people who ran into safety at his help, and three or four of his friends, so a team of five, plus this young Muslim man who helped just save so many of these people. He gave his account as soon as I arrived here in Kenya. I saw his account, the interview they did, and he related what he was doing that day as he received the phone call from his brother who was panicking in there, and went and saved his brother, plus hundreds of people who were locked up as hostages in there. I really think he did a great, great job. He is a great young man.
Yeah, it's a remarkable story. As I said before, you were outside Kenya when this happened on the final days of your trip. As you heard about the massacre from afar, what went through your mind? And then as you returned home to Kenya in the last few days, how was that for you?
I was in Hong Kong after visiting Australia, and the news came from one Chinese lady who told us that there's been a problem in Kenya, and we quickly went onto the internet, began to find the information. I thought it was just a small burglary and a small theft that had happened in one of the malls in Nairobi. But looking at the pictures that came, I began to understand that this is a very large-scale kind of massacre that had happened in Kenya. And soon the numbers were rising from 12 to 20 to 60 people who had died. And I remember one morning I looked at the pictures that came, and then the public was not being shown in Kenya, but I apparently got it from outside Kenya. And I saw the blood, and I saw the bodies of people who had died there. I locked myself in a room and I could not hold back my tears. I had an appointment which eventually we got there a few minutes late because I had to really express my emotion myself in my room because, you know, I don't know the people, but I could imagine just people who left their homes that morning and went into the shopping mall to do their business, and end up in this kind of emergency, and some of them end up dead. Yeah. I wept for them. And so it has been heaviness for me, and just feeling such kind of helplessness, a sense of anger, a sense of fear also for me, because you think It could be anywhere. It could be on a plane. It could be in a church. It could be on the road. It could be in a residential area. You just do not know when they will strike and where they will strike.
Yes.
As I come back to Kenya, I came back just yesterday, and right from the airport, right through the streets of Nairobi and coming to the estates, into the residential areas, I just sense a sense of panic, a sense of fear spread right across the land. People are glued to their TV sets to watch for any information that is coming. The radio stations and the TV stations have been almost 90% reporting on what is going at the West Gate, and looking at the collapsed building there on the TV screen just sends a lot of sense of panic and fear across this country. And right now, my prayer is that God will remove the fear so that we're confident in doing what we need to do and going to the places we need to go to, because you're always looking over your shoulder to find who is behind you.
Yes.
And what might they be planning, and who is your neighbor, what could they be up to. And then it eats into the tourism of our country, because lots of other people potentially wanting to visit our country think that this is the story day in, day out. I would encourage people to come to Kenya, because this is an incident, true, that is shocking, but Kenya is still a great nation worth visiting and supporting.
Edward, beyond this attack, how would you rate the threat of Islamist terror in Africa and the march of Islamist militants?
I really think that it is a potentially big problem when you look at groups like Al-Shabaab and Al-Qaeda, who are intent on doing evil. But I think that the Muslim people should come out strongly and condemn this act, condemn these kinds of groups and motivations, so that we would reduce the impact of the threat of fundamentalists and terrorists in Africa. I think that this could happen anywhere around Africa, but more importantly, when nations of the world, civilized people, take positions against uncivilized acts like this ones, then the potential of that continues to grow. But we should never be cowed down. We should soldier on and continue to bring down the forces of evil and bring confidence and courage and hope in Africa. I think that Kenya has had a big share of these attacks, and I think that Kenya needs more international support in terms of improving our security apparatus and our intelligence. And so together we can build a safer place to live in on the continent of Africa.
Edward, as we'll hear in our extended conversation later in the program, you're no stranger to great challenges at so many levels in Africa.
Yeah.
With this shocking tragedy that plumbs new depths, what do you say about where God has been in this? And what do you say personally to God about this?
Yes, I really hold a position that God is where he was before the tragedy happened. And he is where he is as the tragedy happened, and he will remain to be where he is when good and evil still happen, because according to scripture, he is the same yesterday, today, and forever. There is the existence of evil in the world, and that does not change the place of God. It is a result of the fall of man that these evil things happen in the world today. And we are seeing the consequences of the tragic event that happened in the Garden of Eden, when humanity decided to turn away from God, and we begin to see the consequences of how evil can affect our conscience and how evil can affect our lives and our hearts and our actions as human beings, because these kinds of things are not godly. Yet God, who is a loving God, would allow these things to happen. And he is supreme. Why he allows them, I cannot fully explain, because there are prophets before me in the Bible who would ask, why do bad things happen to good people? I still do not have an answer to that question. It's rather too hard. Why would Job in the Bible go through so much tragedy in his life, losing 10 children in one day and bearing 10 children in one day? And, you know, all the tragedies that happened around his property and his health, it is it is inexplainable. I cannot explain all that. And so I'd really just pray like Job prayed. He says that God gives, God takes away, and blessed be his name. I have cried out for mercy to God that he would save my nation, that he will protect my children, that he will protect our people, and that he would comfort the people that have been directly injured and those that have been bereaved, so that there will be comfort and peace and strength at this hour. It is not an easy thing to go through such darkness. And that is the prayer that I'll make, that God's hands will carry the victims of this attack in his hands, and he will show them a brighter day tomorrow.
Very important reflections at the end of such a shocking week. Edward Ngara, I'm so grateful for you joining us, and we look forward to hearing from you later in the program in an entirely different context. It's a great conversation. That's coming up later.
Thank you, Edward, for now. Thank you so much indeed
for joining us.
Thank you. It's a pleasure.
We hope you enjoyed this Open House podcast. To hear more from Open House, visit openhousecommunity.com.au.